chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Well, normally you would hear Michelle Anna Jordan right now discussing the day's farmers markets and other events, but we've had a little bit of a misfire with our guests, so she's off trying to find out where they've gone. And in the meantime, I'm going to play a little bit of Leonard Cohen.
Blues. no God in heaven, and there is no hell below. So says the great professor of all there is to know. But I've had the invitation that a sinner can't refuse, and it's almost like salvation. It's almost like the blues. It's almost like the blues. Almost like the blues.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, farming, and sometimes fishing, and sometimes barking dogs. Sorry about that little bumpy start. There was a lot of traffic coming from Sebastopol today for me, and, you know, we have driveway interruptions getting to the station for a while. So our guests are here. They're snuggled into their chairs. It is Dominique Cartara of Dominique Sweets and Tom Noble of Armstrong Valley Farms. And Tom, I'm going to tell you to take a hold of your mic stand up near the number four. No, don't hold the mic. There, now pull it towards yourself. Now pull it towards your mouth up a little. And then towards your mouth again. Yeah, I want you right about there.
Radio 101.
And you, I'm going to get you up there a little bit too.
Hello.
And you can wear headphones or not, Dominique. You don't have
really?
To. It's only if you like them.
Oh, okay. I like hearing you more.
Can
you
hear me?
When
I talk in here, now you're hearing me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, no problem. But the only time that you have to wear headphones is when we take calls from listeners, because that's the only way you can hear them.
Must smell cat.
But we're not taking calls.
Okay.
So, but what we are doing is, well, we're going to talk about a couple of things, and one of them is pies, because you make such fabulous pies. And I want to talk about pies that you do both for people to buy from you for the holidays and how they do that, but for people who want to make pies themselves. I want you to talk a little bit about that, too. Why don't you, because you had a sign up today saying, order your pumpkin pies now.
Yes.
So you're taking orders for the holiday.
Yes, I'm taking Thanksgiving orders. I'm doing four different pies. I'm doing pumpkin that I make with sugar pie pumpkins that I roast and eggs from Armstrong Valley Farms and bourbon pecan pies. And apple pies and vanilla custard pies.
What's the most popular?
Well, pumpkin and apple are the most popular, but the bourbon pecan is like really.
That would be the one I'd be interested in.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's got brown sugar and butter and bourbon.
All those
and
good
pecans.
Things. There you go.
Yeah.
Can you throw in the idea of a mincemeat pie?
Talk about a mincemeat pie.
Well,
it's a whoopie-doopie pie.
It's a whoopie-doop. Everybody asked me to make them, but only three or four people want to buy them.
People ask you to make mincemeat?
Yes, but I have never really done it. But we found a recipe from way back that includes venison and suet and all kinds of groovy stuff. So I think I'm going to make some for Christmas.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So mincemeat.
I'll buy one.
Okay. You just sold another one.
See?
Say what mincemeat is.
It's, you know, I don't really know if I'm that well. Okay. It's meat minced, and there's spices, and then there's some
suet,
like
which is the
and
certain
suet, which is
type of fat.
Beautiful fat from around the kidneys, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Good question.
And then
yeah.
Spices, and you kind of like let it sit around
the
and you
true
put it
minced
in some
meat,
crust.
Thing that we got going on is from an old recipe that has venison in it with suet. And it's really a great pie.
So it's a savory pie that you eat at what stage of the meal?
Good question. It's
I've
a
always
big,
made
meaty
sweet.
Pie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my grandmother used to make them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a they had a flavor like the modern mince pies, but mm-hmm. they had meat mixed in with the fruit and the raisins.
That's what I thought, yeah, that mince meat was sort of a lot of chopped fruit,
right.
dried fruit.
I've made vegetarian mince meat with orange and raisin and all of that stuff, and apple even maybe.
So when you make a true mince meat pie, is it sweet or is it savory?
I've never had a true mince meat pie.
One. Okay.
It's like a meat pie, but with...
Like a what? Like,
well, it's like a meat pie, but with...
Sweets.
It's like sweet with raisin and a little bit okay. of like yeah, it's, clover. Well, okay. I can't it's remember like, that. It's been so long. Yeah. It's like 30 years since I had
it. It's almost like a chutney mixed in yeah, with, yeah, the, yeah. with the meat.
Okay, mm-hmm. gotcha.
It's really delicious.
Yeah. I was around them, but I was never interested.
Yeah. Seems our family always just did fruit.
Uh-huh. Dried fruit?
No, just, you know, lemon, apple.
Oh, okay.
All of that stuff. Uh-huh. Pumpkin. It's like a new thing for me.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm willing to forge out.
Stumbled on that recipe.
Tell us mm-hmm. about crust.
Oh, crust. Crust is like doing watercolors. You know, when you do watercolors, you don't want to get too painterly with mm-hmm. it. With
light
crust,
touch.
Yeah, with crust, you need to like leave it alone a lot. You're like, the more you mess around with it, the more problems you'll have with it. Mm-hmm. You just, and it helps if you don't have warm hands, but if you use a pastry cutter, that solves that problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just... need to make sure you don't work it too much. And
so we're talking about flour,
salt, butter, and water.
Okay, so butter is your mm-hmm. your fat of choice?
It is now. I started out making Crisco crusts when I was, you know, that's how my grandmother taught
sure,
me.
Sure, that's how everyone of that age
and
did.
Then I got the Alice Waters fruit book, uh-huh. and her crust was like this combination of... you know, shortening and butter.
Really? Shortening?
Yeah.
Alice?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then it was just so complicated to figure out how much of this and that. And I thought, forget it. I'm just going to do butter. In the beginning, the butter ones were difficult for me because they would kind of melt and collapse. But if you get the crust around the rim of the pie dish, mm-hmm. it has some support and it won't collapse. So my crusts now are all butter, and it's much easier. I don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
So you don't ever do a combination of butter and lard?
No, I haven't done that yet. But Mateo from Mateo's in Hillsborough gave me some beautiful lard.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I might experiment with that.
I love lard. Somebody gave me 2-quart jars full of beautiful mm-hmm. homemade lard.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been having a blast with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, good homemade lard, and it's good for you.
Mm-hmm. It is really good
yeah,
for
it
you.
Yeah, it is good for yeah. you. So how far in advance do people need to order a pie from you?
Well, for Thanksgiving, the cutoff is on the 21st,
okay,
which is just the Saturday before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to be at the Santa Rosa Farmers Market.
The day before.
The day before Thanksgiving for pickups, and I'm going to make some emergency pies.
Good. There are always people who decide at the last minute.
Yeah, there really are. But it's fun. It's fun to be out there the day before Thanksgiving. And then for Christmas, I'm not sure. I think I'm going to be there the Wednesday before Christmas. And so I think the Saturday before that Wednesday. But in general, I bring pies to the farmer's market. And if you'd like to have a pie or a special pie, you text me or call me or email me like a couple of days ahead of time and it's not a problem.
Excuse me. You know, sneezing has been... really bad lately. I don't know what I thought when it got cold, allergies started to subside, but mine have been really bad. So if you heard me sneeze, that's what's going on. So you always sell out of pies on that day.
Yes, yes, I do.
But how many do you sell, do you think, for a specific holiday? Any idea?
Well, last year I did 70 pies.
Cool.
The year before I did 100 and like 5 or something like that. And that was like a stretch. But, you know.
That's a lot of pies.
It's a lot of pies. But I think, you know, I'm just going to go until the cutoff date and see how many I get, and there you go.
Okay.
And then I'll make the emergency ones. I right. usually bring like 20 or 30 extra pies.
Uh-huh.
So.
And then to the one that everyone, I think, associates as the classic, of course, pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what do you do to make a great pumpkin filling?
Well, I get sugar pie pumpkins from
what
the farmer's market.
From farmer's market.
I got,
are they the ones that are...
They're smaller.
Deep orange, mm-hmm. like these nuggets. Yeah,
they are, and they have a thick wall meat,
mm-hmm.
and they're firm. They're not watery. They're great. So I roast those for as long as it takes. I split them in half. I just drop them on the floor until they split, and I stick them on a pan and cover them with foil at 400 degrees for, I don't know, an hour or so. And then I puree those in the food processor, and I use half and half instead of evaporated milk.
Oh, that's right, the old evaporated milk. I remember my
yeah.
mother using that at this time of year.
Yeah, and I just use ginger, cinnamon, and cloves,
mm-hmm.
you know, a little bit of salt and some sugar, and eggs from Armstrong Valley Farm.
Uh-huh. But how many eggs go into, say, the average 9 or 10-inch pie?
One pumpkin pie has 2 eggs. One, a 9-inch pie does. A pecan pie has 3 eggs. A vanilla custard pie has three or four eggs. Three mm-hmm. eggs. Apple pie doesn't have any.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. And that's it. Mm-hmm. That's really it. So it's really simple.
It's simple. It's a custard. And I think the most labor-intensive part is roasting the pumpkin. But I used to, like, slice the pumpkin open. I used to carve out the seeds. I used to do all of that. But you could just, like, do the whole thing and just scoop the seeds out after it's cooked.
It's much easier.
Yeah, and it smells really good in the kitchen, too, mm-hmm. when you're doing it. It's nice.
What do you think the biggest mistake is that home cooks make when they're trying to make a pumpkin pie and they don't love the results?
I think they overcook it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Overcooking or undercooking
mm-hmm.
is a big thing. And I think it's just your recipe, too.
And overspicing.
Like, overspicing. And using, you know, I'm not a, I like nutmeg. There's nutmeg in the vanilla custard pie, but I don't use nutmeg in the pumpkin mm-hmm. pie. Because, yes, if you overspice it, it doesn't taste like pumpkin. It's
anymore,
not
yeah.
rich. You're just tasting, yeah. you know, spice.
Do you ever put a pepper in?
I haven't done that, but you know.
White pepper, freshly ground
oh,
white
yeah?
pepper, I think would be really good.
That would be good. You know, Jim Reichardt's pie crust recipe, we won a pie contest together.
When?
Oh, gosh. 5 or 6 years ago for a blackberry pie. And he put black pepper in it.
Mm-hmm. In the crust or in the pie?
He put it in the pie. He wanted me to put it in the crust. But, you know, he put it in the pie because he said, if you ever want to win a pie crust contest, just use black pepper. It'll work. and we won, so.
There you go. Yeah, I think black or white pepper, or maybe both, mm-hmm. would be really good in pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm. That would be good. It would be great because there's ginger.
Mm-hmm. There's ginger in it. You know, mm-hmm. both peppers go so well with sweet things, especially sweet, wintry things, I guess you'd say.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, I don't want pepper on my watermelon, but on my pumpkin pie, I would go for it. Yeah. Why don't we take a little musical break right here, and we'll be right back.
Des yeux qui font baisser les miens. Un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche, voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon corps, une
nuits d'amour à en mourir. Un grand bonheur qui prend sa place. Les ennuis, les chagrins s'effacent. Heureux pour mon plaisir.
It is a mouthful here on KRCB. My guests, Dominique Cartara and Tom Noble. Tom, I'm going to bring you in because I want to talk about chickens. And how many chickens do you have?
I probably got a couple hundred chickens laying right now.
Okay, so you got them because this is the time that a lot of breeds take their break, right? They molt.
Yeah.
And they molt and they quit laying for what, like 4 to 6 weeks?
You know, it's hard for me to say about that because I have different age groups, and so we just keep laying right through.
Oh, so
and I don't really have that transition of seeing the big holdup.
Okay, so
if you have a little bit of small age. Flock, you really see it. Mm-hmm. But when I have different age groups, I think I see things kind of spread themselves out a little bit, and they keep giving me some eggs.
So you're going to be one of the vendors that will have eggs throughout the winter.
But I'm not sure, you know. You just never know.
Sure.
Because you get in towards, I think it's the daylight change.
Yeah.
And the amount of daylight, as it gets darker, they kind of like slow down a little bit.
Sure.
So I'm kind of seeing what will happen going into December. And
yeah, because I know people with, you know, home flocks right now of 10, 11, 12 chickens, and they're getting
maybe
an egg a day.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's been about 4 or 5 weeks now, I think people have said, geez, my chickens have all just pretty much stopped on me. I'm going to have to buy your eggs. And I says, yeah, you know, you got a little bit, you got 15 or 20 chickens that are all going to stop at once.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a little more like I do, it's hard to see who's stopping and who's going. And
so is it the older chickens, after they're like a year old or so, they're the ones that take this break, the winter break?
It's interesting for me because I have 3-year-olds, 2-year-olds, and 1-year-olds.
Uh-huh.
And they're all they're all firing on all cylinders.
Cool.
It's amazing.
Do we
want to
know what you feed them?
I just give them everything I can, you know, all the garden stuff.
Right.
And, boy, it's really amazing. I think they're just happy out there where they're at.
What kind of space do they live in?
They got about a 1/2 acre they run around on, and they're out before I get there. They're out before the sun comes up.
Oh, so they can get out without you letting them out.
Yeah, I don't even lock them up at night.
Uh-huh.
They're just having a ball.
Cool.
Especially after it rains. Jesus.
And why is that?
Bugs come to the surface? Everything comes up and it's all muddy and they just go nuts, you know.
They like it.
They're just like a pig.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're rooting around like crazy.
Uh-huh.
They can tear your garden up in about 6 hours.
Yeah. You know, do they all roost in the same place?
No, it's like they got 3 different areas that they're using. And
inside a barn? Or?
They actually have their own little space. They have roost up under the roofs. And so they all go back there at night and they hang out and huddle up. And doesn't matter how cold it is, it's pretty warm where they're
hanging
out.
Do you have any roosters?
No roosters.
No roosters. Okay, so
yeah.
They still reinforce their pecking order, though, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us. I find chicken pecking orders fascinating. So indulge me, okay?
Pecking order is an interesting thing, yeah. It's if you put one chicken in or take one out, the whole system changes. They have to go through the whole order.
Of deciding who's...
Yeah. If one chicken dies, for instance, they die periodically. They have to reestablish everything. And this goes on... Could happen on a weekly basis. They're reestablishing. But they're pretty normal most of the time, you know. They're not having a big fuss about anything too much, you know. It's pretty regular routine.
Yeah, and I know that when there's a rooster, the pecking order means the higher up you are, the closer you are to the rooster. So without a rooster, what are the bennies that come with being high up in the pecking order?
The bennies being high in the pecking order. Probably being able to eat more.
Oh, okay.
You know, being able to kick the other one away from you. They have their moments, you know, where it's like, I'm the boss, you know, step aside. So that goes on every day, you know.
So when you see a chicken sort of squawking and flapping at the other one, it's reinforcing the pecking order.
Yeah. You know, they have to take turns in eating, I'm sure. You know, there's too many of them for me to really pinpoint that, but it's pretty much they have to take turns, you know. And if somebody's in front of them, the other one's going to have to wait, you know, and that's kind of the way it is. That's why I'd like to spread out when I feed in the morning, spread it all out so everybody can chow down and get something to eat.
So they
instead of be keeping really isolated.
Yeah. So they have their pasture to dig in.
Yeah.
And then you feed them. What do you feed them?
I feed them chicken feed, regular chicken feed. They're eating every day. They eat a lot of chicken feed. I go through a lot.
And that's been a challenge for chicken farmers like you because the price has gone up so much, right?
Yeah, you know, and you have to feed them every day. You got to give them a protein source to make eggs. People don't realize how much protein it takes to make an egg.
It makes just sense like to
making,
me.
Just like making meat, you know, cows and pigs. And it's expensive side of life, you know.
Well, an egg is such perfect protein.
Yeah.
One would imagine that it would take a lot to produce that. And they produce what, about one every 27?
One every 30 hours.
Oh, 30 hours, okay.
Yeah. So it's hard to keep track of who's doing what.
Sure, sure. Where you are, what do they lay into?
I have boxes in the roosting areas.
Uh-huh.
And you know what's amazing is that they naturally, before they even ever laid an egg, they lay in the box. I never have to go out and hunt for eggs.
Eggs, they just, like, they know.
They know, you know. It's been so many years that they've been laying eggs. Instinctively, they do it.
Mm-hmm.
At first, when I first got my first chickens, I thought, this is going to be a big problem.
You mean the leg, the egg part?
Yeah, where are they going to lay the eggs? Yeah. You know, how are you going to get them to lay in the box? And so I played with that game for a little bit, and then I realized that I didn't have to worry about that anymore.
They just, it's like the roost.
Yeah,
you
so
put
now,
the roost up and
you
they
know,
sleep
after
that.
Two or three years of doing this, they just do it,
mm-hmm.
and you don't worry anymore.
Uh-huh. Where do you get your chickens?
Chickens come from Iowa. McMurray Hatchery is probably the finest hatchery in the United States.
Really, McMurray?
As far as I could tell, it's like it's probably as sanitized as a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They raise all sorts of birds, and many people get their birds from there.
Uh-huh. How do they go from there to
They're
here?
They're born and they have 3 days to live without food and water.
Why?
Can do that.
Oh, they can. Okay, so
and
that's just their nature.
When they're born, they sex them out and they put them in a box, and they got 3 days to get from when they're hatched to get to you in Guerneville.
Wow.
From Iowa, and it's 100% deal. It's quite amazing.
So it's,
by Sunday, they're in Petaluma at the U.S. Post Office, and Monday morning they're in Guerneville. 6 o'clock in the morning, they're calling me saying, come get your goddamn chicks. They're driving us nuts.
So it's like
so the 3 days. I mean, it happens really fast.
Post office,
and so as soon
box?
As I get them, yeah, in a box.
It's really cute.
How many in there?
This year.
100 in a box.
100 in a box.
I have 100.
Ones this year. I've got like a thing with the noise.
I got 100 of them in October, so we got some, what are they now? Almost from October, we're 6-7 weeks now, mm-hmm. or something like that. So, and they're doing really good. It's amazing. You wouldn't believe it.
What's amazing about it?
Oh, you get, here's 100 little chicks that haven't even eaten or drinking water yet.
And what?
So as soon as you get them, you break the box open, and the first thing I like to do is give them water so they hydrate. Mm-hmm. And
Then
in a couple hours, I give them a little feed, and boy, they are off and running.
What sort of, when they first arrive, when you open up that box, what is their temperament like? Are they like, where am I? Or, hi, give me some water.
They're aggressive. They are chirping like crazy, and they're like, they don't know where they're at, and they don't know what they're doing. And you just kind of like, you let them into the world. It's like introducing them to a cup of water. And you just kind of let them do their thing, you know, and they do it instinctively, like mm-hmm. laying an egg. They are really smart instinctively. Uh-huh. They're really smart.
How old do they start? 8 or 9 weeks, 10 weeks when they start to lay?
20 weeks.
Oh, 20 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, a little bit longer than I thought.
You got to go 5 months of daily care.
Yes, okay.
That's beyond your normal daily care.
Yeah, so they're in a heated area. I mean, you heat them with a lamp or that sort of thing?
I only give them light. I borrow a little power from my neighbor for a week, and I give them a light, and then I take it off, and I try to do them naturally.
Uh-huh, cause, well, there was so many
that
keep each other warm.
Yeah, they really huddle up.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I can get them away from the light, and I'm just borrowing it from my neighbor, you know, for a week. And it's like, as soon as I can get them away from that, I think the stronger they get.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think when you leave the light on all night, they get all kind of like used to it. And everything kind of makes them more sensitive. I think when you let them go to sleep like we go to sleep, mm-hmm. you know, they kind of feel a little more normal. Mm-hmm. I feel that they've been more docile for me doing it that uh-huh. way. As soon as I can get them away from that light. I only use the light to keep them warm.
Yeah.
They have to be warm for, they have to be 90 degrees for their first week because they're all huddled up yeah. with no feathers, so they're yeah. like little cotton balls.
Yeah.
So every week they say you can go 5 degrees less. So mm-hmm. in the second week it would be 85 degrees mm-hmm. and then it goes like that. So I try to, if I get them in the summer, it's still warm.
Sure.
It's nice, and they don't have, like all of a sudden we start hitting 36-degree weather mm-hmm. these last few weeks. That's a little tougher to take on brand new chicks. In
sure.
fact, the hatchery isn't even raising any chicks until next February.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, because they don't want to be so.
Yeah, they don't want to even ship them.
Sure.
So, you know, you kind of get used to the order of, you know, the temperature and how mm-hmm. how they're doing it also, you know.
Mm-hmm. About how many eggs do you get a week, a day, whatever, whatever increment of time you want to say?
Right now I'm doing pretty good. I'm getting like 12, 13, 14 dozen a day.
Cool.
You know, and I kind of keep track of it. I'm expecting to get less and less every day, and mm-hmm. so far they're doing really well.
And you attend, what, three farmers markets a week?
Two mostly, and Wednesdays once. Yeah, I try to do Wednesday at mm-hmm. Wells
yeah.
Fargo.
Yeah, that's what I thought you did, Wednesdays, and then Saturday at Wells Fargo, and Sunday at Sebastopol.
Sebastopol, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How's the rest of the year, or the rest of the crop shaping up as the year careens to an end?
I'm just starting to plant a lot of stuff, like garlic and a lot of onions for the spring, and I got some broccolis and stuff in. I'm hoping for January. Kind of taking a break on a few things and try to throw a bunch of stuff out there for Thanksgiving, some carrots and kale and stuff. Mm-hmm. And people need to start eating all the good winter crops.
That's right.
I've been bringing it, and they don't buy it too much, so I don't bring it too much, you know. And they're going to have to start changing their gears from tomatoes and all that and get used to this, the new stuff that we're going to, you know, get used to again. We got to go into our winter stuff.
Yeah, and it's winter stuff that tastes good to me right now. Tomatoes, you know, they're tired.
Yeah.
The tomatoes are
tired. So now we need to change again and get back into the winter things.
Do you ever grow sweet potatoes?
No, but tell me how. I want to, but I think we're not warm enough.
Oh, because no one around here grows them.
I think we're not warm enough.
Oh, really?
That's why everybody asked me, probably the last two markets, they go, do you have any sweet potatoes? And I say, you know those guys over there with the fruit? They're from Fresno.
Right.
They got sweet potatoes. I think they're just hot.
You should try. You should see if there's any cooler weather sweet potatoes.
Help me out.
Okay, I'll see what I can find out.
Do some research on that.
On that note, I think we're going to hear a little bit more music. We'll be right back.
Le ciel bleu sur nous peut s'écrouler et la terre peut bien s'effondrer, peu m'importe si tu m'aimes, je me fous du monde entier tant que l'amour inondera mes matins. Du monde, je me ferais teindre en blonde si tu me le demandais. J'irais décrocher la lune, j'irais voler la fortune si tu me le demandais. J'irais loin de ma patrie, je renierais mes amis si tu me le demandais. On peut bien rire de moi, je ferais n'importe quoi si tu me le si un jour la vie t'arrache à moi, que tu meurs, que tu sois loin de moi.
We're still here. Are you still there? This is sort of a cold weather. A lot of bad news on around the world. Let's have another drink kind of day, I think. Okay, and I should say, I made you start talking about chickens and didn't really say a lot. So Armstrong Valley Farms in Guerneville on Armstrong Road.
Mm-hmm. Right before the park.
An old family.
Yeah.
Old family property. How many acres do you farm?
I just got about an acre there, you know. Yeah.
Cool. And
goes pretty easy. We're doing a lot of onions and garlic right now.
Uh-huh. And you might be doing sweet potatoes, so we're going to look into that. And you get citrus from your brother?
My brother in Hillsburg, yeah.
What does he have?
Boy, I went up there yesterday, and it's just gorgeous, man. There's just lemons and oranges and clusters like crazy.
So will we?
And it's just a backyard thing, you know. There's a tree here and a tree there.
And is it Eureka lemons or Meyer lemons?
Both.
Oh, great. It's hard to find Eureka lemons at the farmer's market.
And that tree is just loaded. And that thing goes till June.
So when are we going to start? Do you have those yet at the market?
Yeah, I got a few coming.
Okay.
And the Meyers, the Meyers all went today at the market. It was unbelievable. Picked them yesterday and they're like all gone. It's amazing. People just love them.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just starting.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
For us, you know, I mean, people from around the other areas, you know, they already have them.
I can't live without lemons.
Jeez.
So I cannot live without lemons.
I wish I could plant a whole bunch of lemon trees, but it's just too cold and gritty.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Dominique, I'm bringing you back in.
Hi.
Come on, you have to.
Okay, here I am.
All right. Sit up.
Okay.
Sit up. you do other things than pies. What are some of the sweet things you're doing around the holidays? Some of the other sweet things.
Well, for the Christmas holiday, I'm going to be making, Bûche de Noël, the Christmas Yule log cake.
Now, will you do meringue mushrooms and meringue snails and stuff?
Meringue mushrooms sprinkled with cocoa powder, and then the whole log gets sprinkled with powdered sugar to look like the snow, and I put like a redwood or a holly branch usually in there. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also going to have biscotti at the markets for the month of December, and I'm probably going to make some ginger cookies and maybe some stollen.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about that? You make galettes. I mean, your tomato galettes, plum galettes, all your galettes are so good. Will you keep on doing some galettes for the holidays?
Yeah, I'm doing apple galettes, but I've also, because the lemons are starting, I'm doing lemon curd tarts. Mm-hmm. And they're like a little lemon meringue pie, but it's with lemon curd. And then I got some beautiful mandarins from Twin Peaks at the market. So I made some mandarin curd, and that's going to be yummy. And so then my macaroons, I'm going to have some macaroons and that kind of stuff. And yeah, the lemons are the big thing right now because I haven't done any lemon curd all summer. Yeah. I didn't have any lemons.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then I'm going to have some groovy, you know, macaroon flavors, you know.
Chestnut?
Oh, you know, I need to get some chestnuts from the hippie guys, you know.
Casadero guys.
Yeah.
From the...
what are their names?
Jim and... Oh, God, it said my caller. Jim, is it Jim and Tom?
No.
I don't know, but they
had one is Jim.
Yeah, they had some chanterelles today.
Yeah, they had chanterelles today. They had, you can get a $10 bag of already peeled chestnuts if you don't want to go to the trouble of peeling chestnuts.
God, they're so good, too.
Yeah, he sits there and peels them.
Yeah, and then there's chestnut flour, too. I mean, for you.
You can buy chestnut flour. Yeah.
It's gluten-free.
It certainly is.
Do you get a lot of requests for gluten-free?
I do sometimes. Well, you know, the Bûche de Noël are gluten-free because I'm going to make a chocolate sponge that has no flour. And I make a hazelnut chocolate tort, which is gluten-free, and then the French macarons, which are gluten-free, but I'm like a gluten peddler, you know.
Hey, I'm with you. Tell me about the pasties you make. I almost got one today.
I had lamb pasties from Williams Ranch.
Williams Ranch lamb is the best lamb ever.
And some really nice carrots from Armstrong Valley Farms. Potatoes from there, and onion. So all of the vegetables are like pretty much organic, and the lamb is like really good, and the mm-hmm. crusty crust. And then, you know, I'll do mushroom ones mm-hmm. too, and, you know, whatever is good. I always bring lamb to Sebastopol and beef usually to Santa Rosa, because
that's
in Sebastopol
what people want.
They like lamb, and in Santa Rosa they like beef.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Each market has a personality.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but
what else do they like in Sebastopol?
They like figs in Sebastopol. They like persimmons. They like pears. They like, you know, they like stuff. Mm-hmm. They're more adventurous eaters, I think.
Oh, interesting. What are you going to do any, like, pear galettes? Any persimmon galettes?
I'm going to be doing some persimmon galettes. I'm done with my pears right now, but I was doing pear galettes. And I've got a lot of apples, and those are very pretty. But I'm going to do some persimmon galettes and trying to think of something else, but I'm not sure, you know, really what's, you know.
Maybe we could do a kiwi.
Kiwi or, you know, pineapple guava galettes. Those are fun. I've even done banana galettes. In a pinch. Okay. And they're really good.
Okay, I like the idea of the persimmon galette.
Mm-hmm, they're good.
I guess you can't really do a pomegranate galette. It would be hard to do a cranberry galette.
How about a quince?
Cranberry curd.
Cranberry curd.
I used to make cranberry curd all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It was really good.
I make cranberry scones.
Yeah. And quince.
Mm-hmm.
You could do a quince galette. You know, they turn such a beautiful shade of pink when you fry them.
How do you get them tender?
Butter.
For a long. Yeah.
You melt butter in the pan, slice them like you slice apples, then just turn them and sprinkle sugar over them right near the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy. The hardest part is peeling and cutting them because they're so hard.
Pain. I did the slow-cooked quince where you cook them from 5 to 7 hours. Gave me a recipe.
Yeah, I was standing
it.
There. She gave me one, too.
Anyhow, I did it, and it was beautiful, but then we went out, and I left it too long, and they ended up shriveling, but it was just gorgeous. They turned like this red color. And very
beautiful.
Tasty.
I didn't get any quince this year from my trees at all. I let somebody pick, and then I went out because there were like 8 to 10 perfect quince, and I went out and they were gone.
Mm.
No idea what happened to them. And the ones that had been on the ground, because there were a few that dropped to the ground, they are gone.
Oh,
so what wild creature?
A raccoon. They're hungry.
But would a raccoon eat a quince?
I know, they're hungry.
They have they're pretty bitter. I have a rabbit that lives next door, and the rabbit is always coming over, so I wonder if the rabbit's been chewing on him.
Maybe it was a human animal.
How do you get the ones out of the tree?
Probably not. I mean, I don't know.
So I'm thinking raccoon.
Oh. Well, these are actually not very tall trees. They're not very tall. They're really not very tall trees. No, the rabbit, I'm wondering about the ones that are on the ground.
Yeah.
Because this is the first year I've ever seen the ones that fall on the ground. Actually, first time I've seen them eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And this rabbit spends a lot of time in my yard, a lot of time.
Oh.
And so she might be eaten. She might not mind them. Maybe they don't sense bitterness, you know.
The other thing is, you know, it's been such a dry drought year that a lot of animals are really resourcing.
Really? Yeah.
That's really amazing, the different things you see with the animal behavior.
Uh-huh.
The chestnut guys at the market have quince. Beautiful
quince. Yes, they're beautiful quince. Just kills me to pay for a quince because, you know.
I know, they're
all
over the place.
Yeah. But yeah, the guys. Oh, and Mike, you were looking something up for us.
Well, I looked up sweet potato.
Sweet potato research. You ask, you receive here on Mouthful.
So it says growing sweet potatoes is very easy in tropical and subtropical climates, and not difficult in cool climates either. In fact, the question is how to not grow sweet potatoes. In fact, the question is not how to grow sweet potatoes. It's rather how to stop sweet potatoes from taking over your garden.
Well,
so it says they like sandy soil. They don't like chicken manure, so that could be a problem.
Mm.
But you ought to try them. It says you can just cut them from a slip and put them in the ground and they'll grow.
Wow. I have to look into that. It'd be exciting. It'd be a fun thing to do.
I think you'd be the first person around here that I know of with local sweet potatoes.
That's the scary part, is why isn't everybody doing it already? It's like, you know, we can grow potatoes.
Well, maybe because, no, I think they're not as popular.
I don't know. They're so good.
Yeah, but they're not as they're not ubiquitous like potatoes are. You have to have potatoes. You have to have mashed potatoes. You have to be able to make potato salad. You have to be able to make French fries. You have to make potato soup. Mm-hmm. I don't think that sweet potatoes are right up there with that, but they're so good for you. And they're really good for dogs, too. I put sweet potato into Joey and Lark's food. I mean, if it's sweet potato time of year, like today, when I made some food for them, they got a sweet potato.
It even says you can use the shoots and leaves in stir fries and salads.
Wow.
There you go.
Pretty versatile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. And they are a member of the marigold family, aren't they? Does it say there? I think they're a member of the marigold family. They're not related to potatoes. Pretty sure it's... Mm. No, not marigold. Morning glory. They're related to morning glories, I think. We're going to find out momentarily.
Well, it's been something I always wanted to try to grow, but I always thought this wasn't going to be warm enough.
I don't think you can grow a true yam. You know, the 100-pound things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's tropical.
That's Africa.
But... yeah, I think sweet potatoes. Doesn't say anything?
No, have to look into
that. Don't see anything.
Okay. We're going to start wrapping up the show.
Okay.
So we can go out with a song that I want to play. How do people get a hold of you to order?
They can stop by the farmer's market on Saturday at the Wells Fargo Center or on Sunday in Sebastopol at the Plaza or... go to the website, which is DominiqueSweets.com, or call me or text at 707-843-9765.
843-9765. And you can always send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net, and I will put you in touch.
Right, yeah. And you can order Thanksgiving pies until the 21st, mm-hmm. and then you would get a confirmation text or email or call or something like that.
Great.
And then the Christmas schedule, I don't really have nailed down yet, but I think I'm going to make like an eggnog pie, like which would be a vanilla custard with rum and brandy in it, okay. and cream instead of, you know, milk.
Yeah, cool.
That'd be good.
And then, Tom, we see you at Saturday, Wells Fargo, Sunday, Sebastopol, and usually Wednesday at Wells Fargo
usually
as well.
Usually Wednesday, yeah.
Okay. And on that note, I'm going to say goodnight just a couple minutes early because I want you to hear this song and think about your friends and everyone in Paris and all around the world where all this nasty stuff is happening. Have a great week. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. And meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB Radio 91. We'll be right back.
You were listening to Mouthful on KRCB FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa. Smart talk about food, wine, and farming for the North Bay and beyond.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms, selling out.